Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
I'll tell you, we've got a dynamite show today. We're going to devote the entire second half of the program to a gentleman who just produced a movie entitled The Real Tony Fauci. We're really, really fortunate having landed this fellow as a guest, because this movie is going to be a real blockbuster, and we're going to devote the last two segments of the program to a discussion with him. Big Al is really looking forward to that, as I know Jim McKinney is also. Jimmy, let's start out with kind of the news flash that really never went, I guess I would have to say, in any specific direction like I wanted to see it go, that came across yesterday about the situation with Hunter Biden, and that the FBI felt they have enough information on the guy to actually indict him. Why don't you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, so there's been a U.S. attorney in the state of Delaware that's been responsible for the investigation on Hunter Biden, and he was actually appointed by the Trump administration.
Yeah.
He was not removed from his position. Usually the attorneys are asked to resign in the change of change of presidencies. In this case, he was not, because of the appearance of conflict of interest over the Biden family and Hunter Biden's potential problems. So according to a Washington Post leak, and this is the Washington Post reporting, there is enough information out on Hunter Biden through a grand jury that's been sitting, actually, this information has been sitting with the district attorney for quite a long, with the U.S. attorney for quite a while. For months, apparently, to indict Hunter Biden on fraudulent tax charges and on felony gun charges for actually making false statements on his application, and then, of course, losing his handgun. A lot of this information was brought to the forefront because of the laptop, the Hunter Biden laptop that was left at a computer office or a computer repair shop, turned over to the FBI and turned over to actually Rudy Giuliani when the FBI did nothing about it over months, actually almost a year. I think the laptop was turned over sometime in 2019. But the laptop has, you know, visual evidence of Hunter Biden doing drugs, taking, you know, crack, and then holding his weapon at one point. And of course, the issue started when his former wife, they got into a fight, and she took the gun because he was threatening suicide or threatening violence, and threw it into a trash can, and the Secret Service had to go find it. And of course, they covered this up numerous times, but anyway, the information is out there, and apparently the information is enough to indict. Now, whether or not any of this goes forward is a good question. It's a very important, obviously, issue for the Department of Justice and the Biden family. But what I predict is there's something else going on behind the scenes here.
What do you think it is, Jimmy?
So I think that the timing of this release in the Department of Justice, look, the Department of Justice, and it wasn't so much the FBI. The FBI kind of blew off investigating Hunter Biden. That's sadly true, especially the Counterintelligence Division, because they because of all the connections with the Chinese and the business agreements that were done between the Chinese and the Biden family, they blew this off. The information here is now with the DA, with the U.S. attorney. He's been held over, but there's probably a reason why. Knowing what this administration's Department of Justice has done to politicize events to support the left, I would predict that what they are doing, somebody released this information on taxes and the gun charge, because you couldn't argue with those. Those are clear. Apparently, Hunter Biden already has paid $2 million.
Pretty black and white, Jim. Pretty hard to refute,
But what they would like to do, I believe, is divert. They can't really hide it. So they've got to divert attention away from the more corrupt issues, which is actually the relationships they had, the Biden family had, with activities with Chinese government and intelligence operatives in the U.S. So I think this is a diversion plan. In my analysis, my view, my personal opinion, is they could not accept, you know, they had to do something about these actions with Hunter Biden. So somebody leaked this.
Yeah.
And they did it in order to divert away from the more serious issues.
Yeah.
And I just am afraid that maybe we get through the midterms, people kind of blow it off and say, oh, Hunter's a bad guy, but Joe's a good guy.
Yeah, well, it's whether Hunter's a bad guy or a good guy. I mean, I think the listeners know pretty well how we feel about that. You know, he's making some very, very serious mistakes by engaging what would appear to be allegedly engaging in really, really illegal self-serving actions. There's no question about that. So, Jimmy, where's this thing going to go in your opinion? Is it going to probably resurface after the elections?
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility between now and the midterms.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look, some states are actually mailing out ballots right now.
Yeah.
And of course, you're going to have states like California and Washington State, which they mail out the ballots, you know, the middle of October, the regular ballots. So, you know, how much of an impact will this have? It'll be interesting. There's a possibility he could be indicted and, you know, publicly announced because of this leak. And again, if I think it would be a diversion effort, if nothing else. But what what I think is going to happen, and you know, I'm fairly convinced of this. The numbers are showing a sizable Republican majority in the House, and then the potential for at least a few seats in the Senate. It's
right.
hard to say.
Right.
But if the House, and it's very unlikely that the Democrats are going to maintain control of the House.
Yeah.
So you're going to see in the House new leadership in oversight committees, intelligence committees, in numerous places
that are going to
put this all this information over a very, very politicized scrutiny.
Depending on how the election turns out,
Yeah, well, if and it's pretty clear they're going to win the House, so that's clearly going to give the opportunity for them to investigate.
Okay.
And it's going to go back to you know, there's a lot of information out there about Joe Biden taking money, about cooperating and coordinating with Chinese officials, meeting with them. And of course, this guy, Tony Bobulinski, who has to wear a flak jacket probably these days because he has so much damning information on what the Bidens, both Jim Biden, Joe Biden, and Hunter Biden did. So...
it's going to be pretty interesting what happens after the November election, because at that point in time, if you're correct with your prediction about the House and the Senate, I think a lot of this stuff is going to come to light or reach the surface, I guess is a better way to put it in my humble opinion. And the information, Lester Holt came out yesterday on NBC News. We are recording on Friday. He came out on NBC News on Thursday and announced that there was this information available. I got very excited because I thought the FBI would go ahead and run with it immediately, but they did not, obviously. I actually stayed up watching the news until almost midnight on the West Coast to see if they were going to do anything about it. And, of course, they haven't done anything about it at this point in time. And you and I have talked about this substantially off mic, and I agree with you that the stuff
isn't it interesting, Al, that they're arresting Christian prayers and singers in the Department of Justice is arresting Christian singers or protesters in front of
it
while they're leaving something like this out. It's unbelievable.
Of course it is. I mean, it's amazing to me, but everything that's going on right now in our society, in our political society, is absolutely amazing to me. What's amazing to me is people don't seem to understand what's going on in the economy. We're going to be right back after the break, and we're going to talk about that. You guys stick around.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Our politics, so this is our shorter segment, so it's a good time for us to discuss what's going on in the economy. Right now, the markets continue to plummet. Jimmy, give us an overview, would you? S&P, Dow, et cetera, as of this Friday morning.
Yeah, so it looks like, you know, the information that came out on jobs did not help anybody. S&P right now at the time of recording is down 2.5%. NASDAQ's down 3.5%. The Dow down almost 2%. Huge numbers.
Yeah.
And the reason why is these unemployment numbers came out today, and it looks like the unemployment rate actually may have dropped a little percentage, maybe a point or 2%, but that is actually not good in the Fed's eyes.
No.
Because the Fed is trying to slow the economy and slow employment in order to stop inflation. This unbelievable inflation that, 40-year highs of inflation that was created by this administration. So you're seeing an earnings up in this report, 5 to 5.2%. But that, again, when you see inflation at 8.3% year over year from the last reporting, you're actually seeing a negative 3%. And the amount of money people on a monthly basis are losing to inflation is incredibly serious.
Of course it is. What I think is incredibly serious right now, is I happen to be reading Jared Kushner's book, and very, very interesting book. And it's very interesting how much his father-in-law accomplished with Saudi Arabia and how that's just going down the tubes right now. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere. It was interesting when you realize that Trump actually was able to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. Everybody agreed to that pretty much. It was interesting that the relationship between the Saudi Arabia rulers and the leaders of America at the time were very, very cordial, for lack of better terms, at the time. And it's interesting how that's totally gone down the tube. And it's interesting that when I say totally gone down the tube, I mean that's evidenced by the fact that OPEC, which is really controlled, in my opinion, pretty much by Saudi Arabia, has decreased production by, what is it, 2 million barrels or thereabouts?
Yeah, 2 million barrels a day.
I mean, that's going to absolutely kill the consumer in the United States.
You're going to see a rise in fuel prices.
Sure you are.
I think the Biden administration announced they're going to increase their sales of the National Strategic Oil Reserve by 10 million barrels. So that's only 5 days worth of an increase.
Yeah.
And the reality that we're facing right now is that all of these issues, inflation, employment, unemployment, the job force, they're all related to the policies this administration put in place.
Towards the Middle East.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not just energy.
Of course not, but that's the main harbinger.
Well, continuing the lockdowns was absolutely devastating to the economy and small businesses.
Yeah.
And it caused supply chain issues, which caused inflation. Then you've got these energy increases, which is a direct result. His first signature event was stopping the Keystone pipeline, which would be operational now, bringing in, and it's a very complex process of how different types, light sweet crude, Texas crude versus heavy crude and where the refineries are. It's a complex process for a global market system. And they are undermining it, this administration, because they have an ideologically driven effort to stop climate change.
Yeah.
Something that the average consumer, the average American voter could care less about. I mean, a very small amount. There's people that care about it. But when it comes to eating or feeding their families or actually, taking care of many, many other issues or crime, this drops below the threshold. And unfortunately, they keep pushing these agendas. They put in regulatory environments to stop U.S. energy production. There is no possible way it can be overcome with green energy in any time, and it's actually undermining the economy.
Right.
Then, at the same time, they're alienating the allies that we depend on in order to balance global economy. So in one sense, I think it's absolutely devastating and really poor management. On the other possibility that you may look at, you know, down the horizon, this is a good thing that people are waking up saying, you know what, we do have to be energy independent.
Yeah.
We don't want to depend on the Saudis or the Russians for gas or for oil. And that may, in fact, come back and bite these guys in the behind, because the reality is we can't force people into this without destroying our way of life.
Jimmy, I want you, when you talk about destroying our way of life, I want you to elaborate on one thing, or I can do that for that matter, but I think I'd like to have you do it. And that is, I had a lengthy discussion last night in light of the Hunter Biden potential situation with a number of our neighbors. And one of the subjects that I brought up was green energy. And I said, you know, what I'd like to know from you folks, right? It was almost like a forum, but I said, what I'd like to know from you folks right now is, why do you think that this emphasis on green energy, on greenness, for lack of better terms, is being really, really furthered by the government? And without a doubt, every single one of the people said it's simple. It's a great way to control the population of America. I'd like you to elaborate on that for me.
No, I agree completely. I think that
the number one
issue for the people right now in power is not the benefit of American people, but it's how to stay in power.
Yeah.
And what they've done is they created emotional attachments and fears in the population through cooperation of the media that somehow we're just going to destroy the climate. And with that fear, they're using that in order to gain voters and to think that this issue is somehow relevant. And of course, some of them believe it. There's a handful that believe it.
Yeah.
But I really believe most of them are, when I talk about most of them, I'm talking about the John Kerrys. I'm talking about the advisors out there. The John Podesta, who is now one of the energy or the green energy czars or whatever. I think they understand this is really about getting the population to follow their narrative and then have more government access and control, which gives them more power.
You bet. I don't think there's any question about that. I think that's what's first and foremost in the minds of the progressives, for lack of better terms, is, I hate to make it real simple and just simplify it by saying, it looks like socialism really seems to be the main objective of all of these folks. But let's take out the word socialism, because that scares a lot of people. It scares the heck out of me, but basically I want to say significant government control, which actually fascism and socialism is. And that, I think, is the end result for what is going on in the government right now. And with the elections coming up, you know, Nancy Pelosi is saying if the Republicans basically gain power in the November election, it's going to be an end to America as we know it. And I agree 100%, but that's positive.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
To the top of the hour news, I want to say we have a really, really interesting guest, Jeff Hayes, on our program. Now, Jeff is a filmmaker. He has produced a documentary film entitled The Real Anthony Fauci. Let me give you a little bit of an introduction into what Jeff is all about. Jeff lives down in Utah. As his publicist said, quote, while American families and businesses struggle to survive financially from the public health regulations imposed by federal and state governments, Dr. Anthony Fauci's family saw their net worth skyrocket, really skyrocket. Dr. Fauci made $5 million, according to recently released documents from his policies that he's got pretty much America, had got America to adhere to. Regular listeners are aware what Jimmy and I think about the way the COVID was handled, a little bit on the ridiculous side. Jimmy, you want to start out with our guest here.
You bet. And Jeff, Mr. Hayes, it's an absolute honor to have you on here.
You bet.
We understand, you know, you've got this movie coming out on October 18th. Can you, and of course, it was based on the book, The Real Anthony Fauci by Robert Kennedy. Can you give us a little bit of a description of how you got involved into this project and why?
Yeah, I'd love to. And guys, thank you so much for having me on. You know, if it wasn't for shows like yours, I would be playing to a vacuum because we're being suppressed everywhere we go. This book, The Real Anthony Fauci, was a publishing phenomenon this year. It's one of the top-selling books of the year. It sold 1 million copies, 17 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, and still to this day has not had one major media review. It was the most suppressed book of my lifetime. Bookstores wouldn't carry it. You know, it's astounding. We've already, our website, therealanthonyfaucimovie.com, we saw yesterday AT&T customers in parts of the area were having trouble reaching it where it's being blocked. And the, you know, we're on 5 blacklist already for a new site for a film that no one has seen. They can't be objecting to the movie because they haven't seen it. They're literally censoring the idea or the thought of this. And that's how powerful this book was. When I read it.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
When I read it, I knew immediately I wanted to make the film.
Right.
Then, like any rational person, I thought, have I lost my mind? You know, this is, I joke that this is my career-ending film because, you know, I've watched what Bobby has gone through, you know, where this guy was, you know, liberal royalty. He was loved and revered. He was a successful environmental lawyer and, you know, was, you know, he had access everywhere. He wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times every 6 months. You know, he was, you know, access to anyone in the United States and all of those doors shut for him.
Yeah.
So, it was not without some trepidation that I decided to do this. I called Bobby. I've known him for years and asked him if he would allow me to do this, and he agreed. And it has been a delight both to work with him, but also to deal with, you know, his book, the exhaustive and detailed research he did so much of my work for me. I just had to go interview the people he had in the book and assemble it in this format.
Jeff, you know, let me just bring up one thing real quick, and I'll just take a couple of seconds here because this is your show as far as we're concerned. I know quite a bit about the Kennedy family. I was very, very taken and impressed and supportive of John F. Kennedy, the president, and I read more and more and more about Bobby. I looked at what Bobby did for the country. I got to tell you, these guys, if progressives today, if Democrats today were like John F. Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy, I probably wouldn't be a conservative. I just want to say that's how much I respect these guys. Go ahead, man.
Well, let me follow up a little bit on your original statements there, Jeff. So connecting with Robert Kennedy Jr., doing this film, putting it together, what were some of the biggest takeaways that you have with the film that actually will impact listeners, watchers, and people that may not understand the full story behind what Anthony Fauci's done over his career?
Well, it's really the story of medical tyranny, and it's I was somehow mostly oblivious to Anthony Fauci until I started seeing him. And, you know, and when he initially, you know, when I became aware of him, here's this avuncular, grandfatherly, even, you know, seemingly rational voice standing next to Trump and then eventually standing next to Biden. And I found him to be likable, you know, and, you know, articulate and, And that was in my basic impression of him. And then he came out and said, you know, no reason to wear a mask. And then all of a sudden he changed on that and a few other things. But it wasn't until I read Bobby's book and I was stunned. It really started in 1984 when Tony Fauci took over a small, not very powerful department, the infectious disease department at the NIH. It didn't have a big budget. Infectious diseases were waning, and it was a small bureaucratic position. And the AIDS epidemic happened, and he jockeyed to get that assigned to his department.
Yeah.
And he took that ball and ran with it and built a budget of $1.7 billion a year and then protected it fiercely as he started controlling all of the money that goes toward research.
You're talking about the AIDS situation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with that, as he controlled the funding, I don't know if you remember the Matthew McConaughey movie, The Dallas Buyers Club.
Of course I do.
Yeah, people with AIDS that were literally having to smuggle in the drugs that were keeping them alive.
Yeah.
That were cheap and readily available that he blocked access to in the United States. And instead, he had people only able to receive AZT, which at that time was the most deadly chemotherapy drug that had ever been introduced to mankind. And this is the same playbook that he brought into COVID as he maligned and marginalized and really lied about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine
yeah.
and the results that frontline doctors were getting. And instead, you know, only would allow remdesivir, an expensive and once again deadly drug that was for Ebola and was too deadly for Ebola patients. And this is what he backed.
Yeah. You know, I want to say one thing about the philosophy of our show, Mr. Hayes. And the philosophy is purely and simply listen to both sides of every story. Whether you're talking about the effectiveness or lack of effectiveness of past President Trump, for example, or whether you're talking about the same two subjects about Joe Biden, for example, it's really critical to listen to both sides of every story and then to make up your own mind. And that's why I really appreciate you coming on the show. Why don't you wrap it up for us, Jimmy? We got about a minute left here in this segment.
Yeah, so I think we definitely want to approach some of the specifics in the second half of the show on what's happening with Anthony Fauci and, of course, the hiding of information, the FDA's, you know, some of the things that you can talk about with the with your movie. And then, of course, we want to get people to be able to watch it on October 18th, the real Anthony Fauci, when it comes out. And of course, we also I think people ought to take a look at some of the films that you've done, other films, because you've got quite a history of and some pretty good successes that we can talk about after the break. So
5 seconds,
we'll be right back. Yeah, we'll be right back, and we'll be meeting with Jeff Hayes and the.
Our politics. Jeff Hayes on the line with us. Jeff is a filmmaker who has put out a film entitled The Real Anthony Fauci, based on Robert F. Kennedy's book. You'll be able to watch that film on October 18th on the web at 12:01 p.m. And the link is www.therealanthonyfaucimovie.com. Jimmy, take over, bud, will you?
Yeah, so I mean, just let's briefly talk about some of the other films that you've done, Jeff, and just to give people a sense that you've been doing this for a while. Fahrenheit 9/11 in 2004, On Native Soil in 2006, and then Doctored, Bought, a number of things. So how did you get, very briefly, how did you get into the film business, and then what was your biggest success so far?
Yeah, so I was a television producer, and when Michael Moore's movie Fahrenheit 9/11 came out, I felt like there was a need for a response to that very flawed movie. And so I quickly put together the film Fahrenheit 9/11. And the day I finished it, Patrick Byrne at Overstock, bought the film from me for $2.6 million. And wow. So it was a spectacular success. He sold hundreds of thousands of DVDs. We got great reviews, even in the New York Times and in Variety. And it was my first documentary. So I followed that the next year with On Native Soil, with had Kevin Costner and Hilary Swank narrating, and we were shortlisted for an Academy Award on that film. And it turned out, you know, documentary world was like dropping a fish in the water. I've stayed ever since.
That's fantastic. So with this new film, The Real Anthony Fauci, we talked a little bit in the last segment about, you know, AZT and what Fauci did there. Let's talk about some of the other things, some of the impacts of his control. And maybe I'm not sure if the film, I mean, you'll have to tell us, does the film approach maybe some of the questions with, you know, where the virus came from and some of the funding that went along with that could potentially have been funded by the U.S. in a Chinese Communist Party lab?
We do actually cover that, and not in great detail, because I think Bobby has announced it, but he's been working on a book this year on the origin of the virus, and that book will be coming out after this film, and I hope to make a film about that book as well, and it is jaw-dropping. And so we had to cover it because of just curiosity in this film. To me, the biggest surprise of the film, the biggest surprise of the book, and if you remember at the end of the book, he starts covering these tabletop games, these war games that were played. There was one called Event 201.
Yes.
That was 6 weeks before COVID-19 was announced to the world that it existed. And in this tabletop game, they mock up news. They have, you know, they go through how they're going to suppress people that are anti-vaccine. They go through all of the details on how to, you know, lockdowns, how to control the public, wear masks. The whole game was done 6 weeks before, and it's all on video. It's in the film. You can search and find it. It was out there for people to see. At the table, you have people from the press, representatives from the New York Times. You have people from public health policy. You have representatives from Gates-funded WHO. But you also have the CIA there. What is the CIA doing involved in United States health policy? They're an intelligence agency. And there's been many of these games. We cover a bunch of them, and it's all the same story, and it's always all the same players.
Yeah.
This thing really was laid out in advance.
Well, I think you've answered your own question when you say, what is the CIA doing in that? My guess is that the CIA and associated departments are probably very concerned, because they, for whatever reason, believe that the way the COVID was handled by the federal government was spot on. I personally had quite a bit of experience with COVID, and I have no problem whatsoever with the way that I handled it, and I handled it just the way my doctors told me to. I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to any edicts. I did get COVID, but because I had the right medications, I believe, and I had the right medications because my wife was dying at the time, and her physicians insisted that she take the medications, and so I took them in deference to Kathy. And I came out just fine is all I can say. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to throw that in.
You know, Jeff, when you're talking about the problems, and of course, going back to the creation of it, let's go even farther back. And one of the things that absolutely was astounding to me was in the 2019, in a conference with Francis Collins, the director of National Institute of Health, and Tony Fauci speaking. And I've seen the video and them personally saying this. They were looking for an opportunity to do a massive event to test mRNA technologies, because they believe that would be the future of treating viruses. And it is almost to me like here was an opportunity an opportunity that could possibly have been created by their own either mistakes or incompetence as they avoided the congressional restrictions and the Obama administration restrictions on doing gain-of-function research in U.S. labs, where they paid another group to actually do the same funding kind of as a cutout, Peter Daszak and the University of North Carolina and the EcoHealth Alliance. And how much did you delve into the film, delve into that at all?
Absolutely, and we've got great footage on it. You know, what it is happened too soon for us to put in the film is the fact that Peter Daszak just got more funding from the NIH.
And
it's like that, last week, it's like, wow, this is like giving the guy with the smoking gun a handful of bullets.
Yeah.
They're not cowed. They're not. I look at the way this film is already being suppressed. Again, I want people, they can go to our site, therealanthonyfaucimovie.com. You can see the trailer there. I think, just as you watch the trailer, you'll see why they don't want it out there. But they really do want me living in a vacuum. They don't want people to see this film. I've always said I can get 100 people to watch a film for every one person that will read a book. But that's only true if I can get people to hear about it and its existence.
Yeah.
And so we're doing all we can. We're making it free.
Right.
I hope that we can get the word out so people can educate themselves and at least know the other side of the story.
Well, I want to tell you one thing, sir, and that is that one of the reasons I'm stressing listen to both sides of every story is we've been talking about the way the government has handled COVID for a lot of years now. And when you stress listen to both sides of every story and make up your own mind, your chances of getting back blackballed, as we could very well be because of this interview, go down significantly.
Here's the problem, though. I think you're alluding to it. I know we've only got, about a minute and a half left here, but the government, there's a number of documentaries that are starting to pop out. There's one called Safe and Effective basically, it's an Epoch Times piece that was done by a British journalist and basically talks, the end of the show, talks about people that were injured, vaccine
yeah.
injuries. And the end of the show really hammers on the publicity and the government intervention to psychologically influence people. And the question becomes, how much involvement was the government in propagandizing in the support of pharmaceutical industries? And I guess that gets right back to Anthony Fauci. We've only got about 30, 40 seconds left.
30 seconds, period.
Yeah, so your very quick thought on this, Jeff. How much influence did the pharmaceuticals have on this problem?
Well, think of it, billions of dollars. If you just watch, your news stations, you'll see who's sponsoring the ads, and you realize that they bought what you're hearing. I hope people go to our site, therealanthonyfauci.com, and I hope they educate themselves as you guys advise your listeners.
We're trying very hard to do that. Let me stress, therealanthonyfaucimovie.com. Check it out. Jim and I feel very privileged in having done this editorial.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.